And welcome once again to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on PRN, Progressive Radio Network. And we're so happy to be with you here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Null's network. And one of the things that you can do is tune in anytime by going to prn.fm and look at the archives. And on the archives, you'll be able to find Natural Nurse. Scroll down to Natural Nurse. That's the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z show. And all of our shows are archived 24/7. You can download them. You can listen to them on your whatever you guys have. Can't even keep up with all the things they have nowadays. I'm still into listening on the radio, actually, in a lot of cases. But what's great about this is that you have this 24/7. Not only the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but all the progressive, cutting-edge information shows that are on Progressive Radio Network. So feel free to join us anytime, day or night, according to your own schedule. And today we have as our guest Kristen Bogonis. And Kristen is the Regional Marketing Program Manager for Whole Foods Market in the Florida region, where I spend the winter, so I'm in the stores there quite a bit. Before moving to Florida over 8 years ago, Kristen grew up in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and graduated from the University of Pittsburgh with a degree in business marketing. During the year she has been with Whole Foods, she served as the marketing team leader, handling events, community partnerships, and donations before advancing to regional program manager. Kristen has always had an interest in travel and volunteerism, which led her on a recent trip to Africa through Whole Foods Market Team Member Volunteer Program. And on today's show, Kristen will share information about the market's Team Member Volunteer Program, as well as other related organizations, including Whole Planet Foundation and Comfort the Children International, which she was involved with as part of a community development project in Kenya. She is personally committed to how much individuals can positively influence the world on a personal, local, and global level. So she is really a gem to have on our show today. So thank you so much for joining us here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Kristen.
Thank you so much, Ellen. I'm very happy to be here and to kind of spread the word about my experience in Kenya, as well as, you know, my experience working for Whole Foods Market.
Well, it's wonderful to be able to focus on a positive topic with so many things going on in the world that are really difficult, you know, a lot of struggling, a lot of problems. Boy, when you listen to the news at night, I know people have trouble sleeping. But even as a young person, you seem to be very drawn to what you can do in a positive way to help others. What was your focus when you were younger? Did you also join in on community events and things like that?
I did, actually. Growing up, I always felt a need to kind of do something more. And in high school, I was a actual vice president of our Key Club, so I did participate in a lot of the AIDS walks and helped organize events for students to actually participate in community-driven events like a senior citizen prom, things like that. So I've always felt this kind of urge and almost responsibility as a citizen of, you know, America as well as the world to do something more if I'm able to.
And when you say, if you're able to, see, this is what's so wonderful about people creating dreams and having a lifelong goal. I feel very fortunate that way myself, in that what you're doing for a living is actually part of fulfilling your original intention.
That's correct. And, you know, moving to Florida and getting the position at the Whole Foods Market in Boca Raton, I really got to see kind of a company with a soul, a company that drove our team members and employees to kind of do something more for not only our local communities, but also around the world, especially where we source our products. Because, you know, as a company, we can have a lot of effect on not only the local communities, but the world in how we run our businesses. So I'm really inspired by what Whole Foods Market does, but also, you know, what our local communities do for each other. It's really neat to see.
Well, it is neat to see. Now, you always also had an interest in travel. Did you do any travel earlier in your life before you did this big trip to Kenya?
I really didn't. I've always wanted to. I've always looked into things until actually last year I went on a trip with two other team members just on our own to Italy, and we actually got to see where we source our Parmigiano Reggiano in a small farm in Italy.
Go into that more. That's a really interesting story.
Well, yeah. I mean, working with Whole Foods Market, you really meet like-minded people that are foodies where we really care and are interested in where our food comes from. And so we went on, you know, just a trip that we paid for ourselves over to Italy, and we traveled into Florence and then a place called Reggio Emilia where we actually met up with a cheese company, and they took us to the actual dairy where we get our wheels of Parmigiano Reggiano. So we got a tour to see the whole system, although it was all in Italian. We had a translator. And it was just amazing to see, you know, two or three people making this beautiful cheese that has been made for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years in the same exact way. And it just, that's why it's so delicious. But also we met the farmer that had a farm right down the road, about a mile down the road, that actually brought the milk directly to this dairy to process the cheese. So it's just a really, really cool experience.
And so then you import that, not just for your store, but basically into the United States, and then it's distributed to the various regions.
Correct, but we actually track down on the side of a Parmigiano Reggiano wheel, it has a stamp of where it actually came from. So the one we visited was 597, which is actually the one the Boca Raton store gets in its specialty department. So we actually traced it all the way back to its roots, which is just a really neat experience.
And what about the milk that they use in that area? I imagine there's much less bovine growth hormone used and much less genetic modification than we see here in the United States.
I think a lot of countries are taking a stance on that and actually made it illegal. I don't know about Italy specifically, but I do know we met the farmer, and I mean, his house is just right on a couple acre farm with, you know, just a certain amount of cows there. We actually got to pet the cows. So, I mean, it's just, they're naturally raised, and that's just how it's done overseas too. And that's kind of what we're pushing for, Whole Foods Market as a company too, when we source products. You know, we're all about naturally raised meat and the dairy and all of those different things too.
So they actually had cows wandering around outside, because that's what that term grass-fed is supposed to actually mean. But here in the United States, very often, even if it says grass-fed, what I've seen happening is that they'll have cows locked up in things that are like feedlots, and they'll just allow them to stick their head out to a little patch of grass. But that's not what you saw.
Right, but that's not what I saw at all, and that's actually not where we even source our meat from. We have a great grass-fed beef called White Oak Pastures, and it's in Georgia, and they are grass-fed their entire life. So it's a great product to buy, and, you know, they're just treated really well throughout their lives with our animal welfare rating system. So it's just a really great, just the products that we source. I would never shop anywhere else personally, because I can trust where we source our products, especially our meat.
Well, let's talk about what you just talked about the cruelty-free rating system. Mm-hmm. Is that what you called it?
That's correct. Yeah, it's actually called the Global Animal Partnership. You know, our quality standards at Whole Foods Market are already very high, so all the meat that we source is from animals that were naturally raised, so they're not administered any, you know, added hormones, antibiotics, or steroids. But we actually went a step further, and it's been kind of 8 years in the process to develop a system that actually went off on its own. It's its own program called the Global Animal Partnership, and it's basically a step rating from 1 to 5 on what the farmers and ranchers are doing to take care of the animals. And every single one of our ranchers and farmers had to have met a step 1 2 years ago, and that means no crates, cages, or crowding. So so that's one of the biggest problems that there are in the industry right now is you know, animals are kept in tiny areas, they're crowded, you know, a lot of people have seen Food Inc. And we wanted to take, you know, more of a stance on this and really change the industry, and we have. And that relates to our chicken, beef, pork, and now turkey, all meat, at least a step one with that. And then it just goes into a step two, can be enriched environment, where it's something simple as providing perching for chickens, because they naturally sleep on a perch. So it's just providing those natural environments for the animals so that they live just a better life. And we in turn think it gives, you know, a better product to our customers.
Well, and it's amazing to me that you got the chance to actually go and look at these things yourself, like you actually saw cows out in the field eating grass in Italy, and that in turn moved forward to the production in small batches in a very ancient way of real cheese, and you got to see the one that actually came to your, to you personally, regionally. That's a wonderful opportunity.
It was. I'm definitely a foodie, so it was really neat to kind of trace a product back to the source, but it also enables me to kind of, you know, be able to talk to customers about our product and how special it is, because every bite really has a story to it, whether you source it from a local farm or you source it from, you know, something overseas. So it's just really neat.
Well, Kristen, it's funny that you call yourself a foodie, because I would say, you know, you're a young woman and you're in beautiful shape. You don't look like you sort of overeat all the time, that's for sure. So that's not what foodie means.
It's just being knowledgeable about the food you eat and caring about where it comes from and who it affects, but also, you know, liking, you know, trying new things and tasting the things and cooking and all of those different things. So I worked at a great place for 6 years at Whole Foods in Boca. So I was, you know, given the opportunity to learn all those stories and kind of spread the word, which is really neat too.
Oh, that's so nice that you're sharing that with us. Now, of course, we're also going to talk about other adventures that you have had as part of your experience. And that is going to Kenya. Now, how did that develop?
Well, a few years ago, we have the Whole Planet Foundation through Whole Foods Market. So it's just another way to help out the poor in the countries where we source product. We really want to make sure we're dealing honestly in the way we're sourcing things and really help out those communities that need it. So the Whole Planet Foundation was started back in 2005, and they basically provide microloans to the poor in those developing countries where we source product. It's a loan as small as something like $162 to $200 that are helping these people start their own companies. And you're going to hear me say probably empowerment and sustainability a lot, but that's really what it's about. It's just empowering the poor to and investing in them so that they can actually sustain themselves with a small business and lift themselves out of poverty, and usually a whole family. And that in turn, it's a whole cycle. It affects the communities and neighboring communities, and just it really makes a huge wave of a difference across the world.
Now, also, in terms of what companies you're going or what countries you might focus on in the Whole Planet Foundation, how is that decision made, and what are some of the other countries that are involved in this program?
Well, the Whole Planet Foundation, like I said, works in those countries that Whole Foods Market sources product. Because it's our nonprofit, we're able to, as Whole Foods Market as a business, pay for all the operating costs for Whole Planet Foundation, so that every dime that's donated to the Whole Planet Foundation actually affects people in these communities where we're getting our product. So places like Costa Rica, Kenya, Peru, all these different places where we source bananas and coffee, like in Africa. So we want to make sure that we're supporting, you know, the neighboring communities from where our suppliers are providing us with this amazing product. And we can do that at such a small amount, and such a small amount makes such a difference in these developing world countries. So it's really neat to see it make a difference in those areas where we're, you know, our supply chain is coming from.
So there's certain kinds of products that you might be getting in different places around the world. I'm always amazed also about some companies will say, I'm thinking of herb companies now, that they get all of their products only in the United States. But if that were true, they would have to have such a small variety of products, because there are certainly things that don't grow in the United States and in terms of food sources that are not available in the United States. So you are actually reaching out internationally to support a way of growing that's sustainable, let's say in terms of herbs, I'm thinking of herbs right now. If you were to support farmers that learned, if they're gathering a crop, not to pull all of it out at once so that you still have it the next year, that would be a sustainable practice.
That's correct. And we actually do, in relation to Whole Foods Market and the Whole Planet Foundation, we also have a whole trade certification. So those are on products where, you know, if the farmers in other countries are growing sustainably, but we're also ensuring that we're paying them fair wages and a fair price for the product, as well as making sure they have good working conditions. And then we, part of that, anytime you buy something that has a whole trade certification symbol on it, such as coffee, sugar, chocolate, bananas, we're donating 1% of sales back to the Whole Planet Foundation, which in turn cycles back to those communities to help people sustain themselves, which is, it's just, everything is really connected.
Well, when I worked in the field, and I still do, and I actually take a trip, we should do this together sometime, because I've often worked doing group trainings.
Mm-hmm.
For organizations, and one of the things I've been doing for many years is taking people to the various island communities, such as Jamaica and Costa Rica, and we'll work with the shamanic healers there, learning about the natural plants that they use for food and medicine. And then we'll bring back samples of that and analyze them in laboratories, natural product chemistry laboratories, to see what are the actives that make this thing such a great medicine. We don't question them, because if they've been using it for thousands of years a certain way, just like you see with food and the cheese making, that's the right way of doing it. It's been lasting that way and passed down, although it might not be the best way to do it industrially. But then if any of those products become marketable, there's something called intellectual property rights, which is a similar concept, to where the original information provider gets money back to that community, either personally for that person or to the community to build schools or set up a well, or, you know, a lot of people don't have really basic needs like that.
Right. And, you know, for example, you know, and you would know this too, because you're in our whole body department often, but we do have a lot of lotions and things that are made from, you know, the shea butters from these countries too, but a lot of the money is being invested back in those communities. So a lot of these things are very similar that we're talking about with that, but, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with those products as well.
Yes, and so, you know, that's a really great thing that you're doing, is actually bringing it back. Now, if you were to go, and you can talk about Kenya, because that's where you actually went, or let's move to Kenya. Why did you specifically go there as part of your group trip?
Honestly, in my heart, I always felt a pull to go to Africa. There's opportunities for team members to visit, you know, all over the world, and we're expanding that so quickly. You know, you can go to Guatemala, Costa Rica, Peru, Kenya, I mean, so many different places. But Kenya was one of the newest ones added to the trip. And I've always just felt a personal connection to that for some reason. So when the opportunity became available through the Whole Planet Foundation team member volunteer program, I immediately wanted to do that. And team members for Whole Foods Market simply can write an essay to go, and if you're chosen, you provide, obviously, the money for your flight, but then the Whole Planet Foundation or Whole Foods Market actually provides you with your, you know, the accommodations and food and everything while you're there, since it is a volunteer program. So with Kenya, there's just so many interesting things, and it's so far away. I felt like it would just be, you know, the most unique experience, and just see how people live on the other side of the world. So, plus, you know, what we were doing there was working with another organization called Comfort the Children International. And in a small town outside of Nairobi called Mai Mahiu, we were able to really see the difference that Comfort the Children was making in this community here, which is probably the most unique experience you could possibly have. Plus, you get to experience culture. We were able to go on a safari, so you just really get to experience the country, the good and the bad, and everything else. It's all a beautiful experience.
Well, we're going to let you share a lot more details about that experience, Kristen, but we are going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we are going to hear one of our recordings, which is called The Natural Medicine Chest. So we can always take your comments at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse or at naturesanswer.com, and we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural... We'll be right back.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com or at naturesanswer.com. Now, today we have as our guest a young woman, Kristen Pagonis, and Kristen is the Regional Marketing Program Manager for Whole Foods Market in Florida, and she's sharing with us travels to Africa that she made through the market's team member volunteer program, and she's telling us about Comfort the Children International. I don't think we got to talk about that yet, and her experiences traveling to areas of the world where people are definitely not living the exact same kind of lifestyle that we're used to here in the United States. So thank you so much for joining us again today, Kristen.
Thank you, Ellen.
Now let's share with the listeners, you know, from your perspective, what did you experience? Like, how long is the trip? You know, just something like that.
Well, the trip is pretty long. I flew from Newark into London, and then from London to Nairobi. It's nice that it's only two flights, but you definitely are pretty tired when you get into Nairobi. But you know, you just have that excitement of being in a totally foreign country and culture that kind of keeps you going through the whole thing. But you know, when you get there, it's definitely a different place. You can definitely tell when you first get in there. But everyone was very nice, and we were actually picked up by Comfort the Children International, which is the main charity we actually worked with outside of Nairobi. We would have worked more with Whole Planet Foundation as well, but the borrowers and the lenders are so busy running their businesses that they didn't have a lot of time to spend with us. Plus, we did a lot of brainstorming with CDC and got to see kind of a different side of Africa, which was definitely unique.
Well, tell us that. Give us real in-depth detail about what you mean by that, a different
Sure.
side. And
Well, Mahimahu is a small town. It's actually about an hour outside of Nairobi. And as you're driving in, you're on a main trucking route, which goes through Nairobi to the next, through Mahimahu to the next town. So there's a lot of hustle and bustle going down this one road, and you get to pass the Great Rift Valley, which is an amazing sight. It takes your breath away, so seeing that was definitely an experience. And if you Google it and see photos, it's nothing like seeing it in person, but unbelievable experience. But Mahimahu is a small town at the bottom of the hill right outside of there. And you see this beautiful sight, and then you drive into a town that has, you know, it's overcrowded. There's no sanitation pickup. So imagine how lucky, you know, you feel when you get back home and appreciative that, you know, there's actual sanitation and garbage pickup in your neighborhood. This town doesn't have it at all.
I want to stop you right there, but
sure.
Don't forget where you're going next, because that in and of itself is an amazing concept, and I want to visit it. For instance, I've traveled around the world, as I've mentioned to you and our mm-hmm. listeners, for many years, more than 50 years, actually, to indigenous cultures around the world. And I remember going, I'll just give an example, to the Dominican Republic to visit some curanderos, which are shamanic healers in that area. And then I went back after 30 years, just recently, about 2 years ago, and in the middle of the jungle in a village was an amazing and actually quite horrible sight. Because think about this. These people who had lived a wild, basic a lifestyle connected to the earth for thousands of years, when they always ate out of a coconut shell. And when they finished eating, what do they do with the coconut shell? There was no garbage can, so what do you do with it?
You just throw it, but
it
works back into the environment. Yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it just goes back, and it's fine, and it acts as fertilizer, and no problem. Now they have an amazing amount of styrofoam containers
mm-hmm.
because one of the first steps into these cultures is through the fast food industry and our commercialization of that. And they would take these styrofoam cups and do the same exact thing, which is just throw them on the ground. And I'll tell you, it is some sight, and perhaps you saw things like this, garbage that will never break down, literal garbage of styrofoam and plastic, when I stood in the middle of this village, was as far as you could see it on in any direction. The entire ground is covered with it. And it's because of what you're bringing up, Kristen, that there's no such thing as garbage pickup. What's that, let alone recycling? And we take so much of this for granted. So what did you see as a consequence of no garbage pickup?
Children walking to school amongst, you know, just garbage and, you know, garbage in water systems. You know, there are a lot of animals walking around, like donkeys and things. So, you know, there's nowhere for them to go. So that's just everywhere. It's, you know, the saddest thing is seeing children having to walk to school in that. But, you know, it was, you know, driving into a town, that's the first impression we had. And I want to come back to later what CTC is doing to help that. But, you know, it's that Western kind of culture bringing in these problems into these towns, and they have no way of fixing it unless someone helps them. So it was a terrible sight to see, but, you know, after a couple of days, you get a little bit used to it.
Well, you have to, because otherwise you're walking around in a state of shock. So, you know, we as humans have compensation mechanisms so that we can function under less than ideal conditions. But,
right.
You know, so you almost don't see it as much, because otherwise you – How horrible is that to see school children walking through basically feces, garbage, human waste, animal waste, and what kind of water facilities do they have?
A lot of them don't have any. I mean, it's pretty impoverished there. But, you know, you do start to see a little bit of a difference, you know, in working with Comfort the Children. You see kind of their impact that they've had on the community over the years. And their philosophy is great, because they don't necessarily, like a lot of United States nonprofits or American nonprofits want to come into other countries and put our kinds of solutions onto these countries. But we're bringing Western solutions to African problems, and it's short-lived. It doesn't fix the problem.
Okay, well, could you give me an example of that? And by the way, I do want to shout out that Comfort the Children, we do have a link as part of our show description here, but it is ctcinternational.org. That's Comfort the Children, ctcinternational.org. So what would that look like with an, let's say, U.S.-style intervention versus something that Comfort the Children might want to focus on?
I think, you know, just with a U.S. intervention thing would be to do something that's not going to sustain these people. So it may be something that works in a country that's a little more further ahead with technology or environmental. It's different environmental needs there. But with, you know, Comfort the Children, they educate in the primary school, where many of the children have, you know, one uniform and they're torn to shreds, and they don't have much money. They go to school just in primary, and most of them can't afford to go to high school. They teach these children how to farm and how to garden with items that are going to grow, you know, unique to that area, like corn and kale and things like that. And giving them those kind of resources is going to sustain them over a longer amount of time than providing ones that are short-lived, that are more of a Western solution. Or, for example, Comfort the Children has a couple acres right outside of the town, and they started a poultry education for these children and even for adults to learn how to raise chickens and how to sustain themselves off of that. Or, you know, giving someone a cow may provide more for them than giving them just, here's $100 to buy food for, you know, a few weeks, and once it's gone, it's gone. It's not providing empowerment or sustainability for these people that they're going to need to survive over the long run.
Let me ask you this. Did you see any focus on goats? Because I personally raised goats, and I think that they're actually a much more efficient animal to raise than cows.
It's probably more out in the farm areas. This town was highly populated in a small area, so I think it was a little more poor than living out in the country where they have access and can raise them. I saw a lot of donkeys, which I guess are just used to carry things and pull carts and things like that. But no, not really any goats, which is kind of surprising. But
it is, because my personally, and I've worked with a lot of organizations here in the United States, in areas that also with disadvantage, and we found, I'm just throwing this out there, that goats are fabulous because, you know, they're much more, when you talk about sustainable, they can eat much less than a cow and still, you know, create milk. They take up less room, and even their droppings are highly usable and very efficient as fertilizer. So I'll just throw that out there, because in your position, who knows where you're going to go with this as you develop, and I'm just, you know, planting a little seed of thought for you, because I know you'll be working in sustainability your whole life.
Right, and I mean, you hear of goats and you know, even Heifer International is to buy a cow for someone. It's just, it's really, rather than just handing them a little bit of money to have a meal, you're really giving them the resources to succeed in life and, you know, provide for their families. So that's kind of that difference of giving solutions that work in these areas rather than just giving a handout. It's a hand up, which is a really neat thing, and that's sort of what the Whole Planet Foundation does too with the microlending. But with CTC International, you know, they came into this small town and they said, what are the problems here, and kind of named all the different things and started with one of them and tried to find solutions, you know, asking people in the towns, you know, and referring to them to really find the solutions that were going to last.
Well, let's talk about those specifically. Perhaps you know of, let's say, what would a list like that look like in that specific town, if you remember what kind of issues they were dealing with.
Right. Well, with the you know, just poverty in general and people not having food to eat, you know, teaching them skills that are going to sustain them, like gardening, raising poultry, things like that. They're also, they have something called Malaika Mums. They're moms in the area that have children that are disabled. And in African culture, this is actually pretty interesting. In African culture, when you have a disabled child or adult, it's actually thought that the family has been cursed, which is very sad. So a lot of times, you know, they don't let their children leave the homes, and the children don't get the care that they need. So with Comfort the Children provided, a lot of the moms in the area that do have disabled children that need help, they call them Malaika Moms. Malaika means angel. They give them an opportunity to sew products that we now sell in Whole Foods Market, and they're able to sustain a living and send the disabled children to school for the first time. And it's really changing kind of the perspective on being disabled, or, you know, it's changing that culture and society to make them more acceptable. And these children, we met them, CTC provides schooling and classes specific to the children's needs, and the moms are able to, you know, sustain a living off of these small things that they sew for us to sell at our coffee bars, which is just an amazing concept. And meeting these women, and they're so thankful and applauding us, and I just felt like I didn't deserve it personally, but you know, coming back and being able to tell the story is just a really magical thing. So,
well, give us an example of what kind of thing they might make. And then there's a whole lot of logistics between making something in Kenya and even filling out the paperwork to be part of this program. How does that all happen?
Well, I mean, Whole Foods Market, they make things happen that are important to us. So we actually did it through our Allegro Coffee Company. The first product that we brought in from CTC, from these Malaika Mums, was something called a life jacket. So the life jacket is this simple reusable canvas sleeve that goes on your coffee rather than using kind of the cardboard ones. So not only that, it's environmental, but it's only 99 cents at our coffee bars, and it's a really adorable gift or thing to use for your coffee. And it really does give money back to these women. And I'm not totally familiar with the shipping and all of that, but I'm pretty sure that we probably cover, you know, the overhead for that, because we want the women to get 100% of the money back to them so that they can support their families and these children.
So that is a big part of what your organization does, which is set up the ability to make these things happen, because it's not that easy. I mean, if I even felt like selling my book, let's say, you know, I have to have a certain amount of expertise and knowledge to post it on Amazon and to know and to have a place to store it and a place to ship it. I mean, all these things often are huge hurdles for people in these circumstances.
Correct. And I think from Whole Foods Market, we have such a commitment to, you know, doing the right thing. If you read about all the programs that we do in the Whole Planet Foundation, the Whole Kids Foundation, I mean, I just think we have such a commitment of having, you know, being conscious as a business, and really not taking advantage of our suppliers, but rather doing the opposite and taking care of them. And, you know, team members get to go out and see this difference, and it just is amazing to see how happy these moms are to sew these products for us, and how excited and thankful they are that we're able to sell them in our stores. And it's really changed their lives. They're able to afford, you know, housing, even if it's literally like a 6x6 cinder block building with a cement floor. They're able to provide that for, you know, a disabled child, or, you know, sometimes two or three children. So it's making a huge difference there. And that's only a small part of what they're doing. I mean, we brought in a bunch of other products. We have really adorable change purses that are sewn by them. We brought in beaded bracelets, these beautiful African beaded bracelets that are made by the grandmothers that are actually out there in Mayumahu, and they are part of GAPA, which is a program CDC does, which is Grandmothers Against Poverty and AIDS, which most of us do know that AIDS and HIV are a huge problem in Africa, but in this small town, because of the trucking that goes through this town, there's a lot of prostitution, and it really is contributing to the onset of, you know, AIDS and HIV with young people. So these grandmothers that are here are taking care of sometimes 5 to 10 grandchildren because they've lost their daughters to HIV and AIDS, and they have no way of making an income. So by providing these beautiful bracelets and things that we're able to sell in the stores, it's giving them money back to, you know, build a new mud hut house, which makes a huge difference in their life. So it's just a really neat to see it come full circle when we just got these products in, and they're almost nearly sold out in all of the stores. I'm sure if you get to some of the stores, you can still find them, but it's
just
amazing.
That's nice to see that kind of support. So we're going to take another break right here, Kristen, and then when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion of your adventures in Kenya. You can tell us more about exactly what you did while you were there. And we're so happy that you're here sharing all these thoughts about positive action steps that can be taken and are being taken to make our world a better place. We'll be right back right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can get in touch at naturalnurse.com, naturesanswer.com, or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We'll be right back with more. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And one of the books that we've written called The Natural Medicine Chest, and you can find that at naturalnurse.com under books. Of course, we've written many books. But The Natural Medicine Chest in particular has a full chapter called From the Shaman's Garden. And actually, it's more than a chapter. It's many chapters. It's the entire back of the book. And what we discuss there is the travels that we do to indigenous cultures around the world, including Jamaica, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, and other areas. And the work that we've done, and we do, in fact, we take people on these journeys. We have two coming up in March. They're posted on the website at naturalnurse.com. And the one to Jamaica in March is actually now a fully fledged course where you get 3 college credits through the University of Stony Brook in New York. And it's called Ancient Studies. And we go to these areas and actually experience what is going on in these native cultures. And we also do a lot of work like what Kristen is talking about, in terms of helping people put together sustainable ideas that can help them move forward in a positive way into the future. So if you'd like to join us on any of our trips, feel free to get in touch. We are now taking registration for our journeys in March. I want to reintroduce our guest, that is Kristen Bogonis, and Kristen is the Regional Marketing Program Manager for Whole Foods Market. She has always had an interest in travel and volunteerism, and that led to a recent trip to Africa that she made as a team member through Whole Foods Market's Team Member Volunteer Program. And Kristen is sharing with us today about the volunteer program, the Whole Planet Foundation, and Comfort the Children International. Now, we were talking about Comfort the Children, Christina, and that's not actually a Whole Foods organization, correct? That's an international organization to help children.
That's correct. We do now source those products from them in order to help support, you know, their efforts in Kenya, which we do sell in the stores at this time. But they're very, very similar to what Whole Planet Foundation does and what Whole Foods Market's about in their culture and sort of how they run their organization as almost a business, which is a really interesting concept for a nonprofit. But, you know, I keep mentioning that sustainability, but really for they're a standing model that a lot of nonprofits could probably learn from. And they do, you know, obviously rely somewhat on donations from, you know, those of us that have gone on the trips or their, you know, supporters in the States, but they also sustain themselves on their own small, you know, business opportunities, so they don't have to heavily rely on that anymore.
And that's a much better way to move forward into actual change.
Correct. And we spent, you know, the group that I went with from all over the country, from Whole Foods Market, there was about nine of us. We ended up being called the innovators. So we spent 2 days working with the Comfort the Children staff and really trading culture ideas on how Whole Foods Market runs culturally, but they also taught us a lot of things about how they run theirs. And we really learned a lot of business ideas and just doing the right thing. It was just interesting.
Give us an example.
Well, you know, Whole Foods Market, we traded our core values. So, you know, the way we do our marketing. So we got to share a lot of how we do things grassroots with our organization. You know, with Whole Foods Market, we reach out to the communities. We have a marketing team leader that does community relations in each community. And we don't spend a lot of money on, or we don't spend any money on TV commercials or advertising or anything heavy with
Wait,
that.
Now that you mention it, that's true. I don't ever see that on TV.
Whole Foods Market's very grassroots in our marketing, and we think we can make a difference better that way, but also we rely on word of mouth. We go out and work with local nonprofits and local schools and really educate about healthy eating and educate, you know, about the environment, all of those different things. And that's been our form of marketing since we started. And it
Well, I'll tell you what I've experienced of that also, even in the New York area. You mentioned that some of those movies, such as Food Matters and other more progressive movies, and a lot of them are coming out. And here locally, Whole Foods has donated food that is given out for free to people who come to the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we've done educational movies on site in a lot of the stores. We rent a blow-up screen and play Food Inc. We want people to know, you know, what's going on with their food systems, but we'll also, you know, raise money for local nonprofits that support the same core values that we do, such as environment and education and healthy eating. So we're really passionate about that, and, you know, every community is unique, so that's why we have a person in that store to kind of, you know, bring the community together and provide what is needed. But it also helps us spread the word about what we do as a company, which is, you know, is our form of marketing.
And you've certainly shared a lot of that with us today. And before we sign off, though, tell me what your experience was like when you got to Kenya. I mean, did they – obviously you don't speak whatever language they speak there. So how did you communicate directly with people?
When we were in the small town, it was – there were a lot of people that did speak English pretty well, actually. They have beautiful accents, but they do speak Swahili, too. So we, you know, did learn a lot of basic Swahili to speak, but it was a lot harder communicating with, you know, the Malaika mums in the towns But we, you know, it's just funny. There's just universal smiling and hugging and things like that that you find a ways to communicate. So that's kind of a neat thing. And when we visited the primary school in Mahimahu and were with the children out in the garden, a lot of them didn't speak English at all. So it was a lot of pointing to plants in the garden. But what was really interesting and probably one of my favorite memories was the school children ending up, they actually sang a lot of songs for us, and we danced and, you know, played dancing games. So you learn to connect on other levels with people on a basic human level. And it was probably one of my favorite memories, you know, just dancing and singing with the children. And they actually didn't know a lot of English, but they sang a lot of Christian songs in English. So it was just a really beautiful day that we had with the children, and I'll never forget it. So
overall, the feeling tone that you got was one of acceptance and welcoming.
Right. Walking through the town was a little different because we were, you know, the minority there. So our skin color was actually, people would stare, but we were really, really accepted by the moms and the people that were tied in to comfort the children. And they're such a part of the community that the children, I mean, latched onto us right away. They wanted to hug us and shake our hands and high five. I mean, it was a beautiful thing, and they just are so thankful for what they have.
So that's an interesting experience and also opening for you in terms of not being the people in charge, sort of, like you said, as you walk through the town.
Right. I mean, it was definitely, we had a guide every time we walked through, and it wasn't because we were in danger, but it was just, you know, a unique experience because you're being, you know, looked at as if you're like an animal, you know, you're just, they don't know who you are, and it's you stand out. So it was an interesting experience to have that, but eventually, you know, people kind of got used to seeing us in the town, and but we were so heavily accepted and loved on by, you know, Comfort the Children and all the people involved with them, it didn't really make a difference. So
as we sign off today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, what would be a good way for people to connect with you or for these organizations if they would like to learn more?
They can actually visit any of the websites on there, or they can send me an email at kristen.bogonis@wholefoods.com. And hopefully I'll get some kind of blog set up that has a lot of my own photos and things, which I can provide at a later date. But, you know, if they want to support any of the organizations, we have our annual prosperity campaign with Whole Planet Foundation starting in mid-February through March. And 100% of every dollar donated at the registers or through any events that any of the stores have go directly to the micro-lending that happens in these other countries. But also you can visit the stores and go to the coffee departments. And we have the bracelets and these beautiful bags and change purses and the Lifeline products for sale there, and you can purchase those. They make really great Christmas presents or Hanukkah presents to kind of, but it's also giving back. So it's just, it's like a gift that gives twice. So those are ways to support them. And obviously I'm available for follow-up if anybody wants any more information.
Well, thank you so much for the great work that you're doing, for your commitment to a positive future for yourself and the planet, and for, you know, I know you personally work very, very hard, and you have a commitment on this, so we're very happy to have you in an important place that you're at in terms of being the Regional Marketing Program Manager for Whole Foods Market in Florida. So, listeners, thank you so much. You can always get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com or naturesanswer.com or visit us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next week, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. Stay healthy.